So to complete our morning session is Catherine Scovell. She is the Associate Executive Director with the Canadian Pork Council, and we've asked her to speak on a tough topic, transitions in animal welfare as it applies to confinement systems. Thanks, Catherine, for being here.
Right. Thank you very much. I find it curious that the discussion on the pig code follows a discussion on pain. I'm wondering what the parallels are there. But I really do want to get back to the work of NFAC and the work of codes. And I hope to give you a bit of a window into what we've been facing in the pig code and the challenges that we've had both around the code development committee table and the more public debate. And it was interesting yesterday that the panel, Fred was talking about the disc jockeys and the policy wonks around the code tables. And I guess I'm in that category. I'm in the disc jockey and policy wonk. And so I guess my job is to play back a little bit for you what's happening on the pig code. I'm also accused of being the city girl when I sit around my board table because I'm not from a farm. My background is more in economics. And so I get that criticism. But what I prefer to be seen as is a little bit of a voyeur. I am fortunate enough to sit on the pig development code as the industry liaison, but I also get a lot of the feedback, all the feedback from producers in terms of how they're viewing this code without the benefit of them sitting around the table and having those discussions. And I also, because I work in a national office, see kind of the global perspectives, and that's kind of what I want to share with you today, all of those kind of confounding perspectives for this challenge ahead of us on the pig code. So just a little bit of background. I'm with the Canadian Pork Council. It's the national association representing hog producers. Our members are the provincial hog producer associations, who in turn, their members are hog producers. It's actually the Canadian Pork Council that asked for the code back in 2009, and we started the work in 2010. After 2.5 years of discussions, the draft code was launched for public comment this summer, and we received about 4,700 comments. That's, as we understand it, more than any other code that's been under this new process, and I think it's even more than the sum of all the comments received from other codes. And it seems like a lot, but when you break it down, you know, it's really not a big percentage of the Canadian population that's engaged in responding to the pig code. I think we had really good response rate from producers and from producer organizations, as you would expect. They've got a vested interest in this. But even though the numbers are high, really it's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the Canadian population. But even so, there is a high level of engagement on the pig code, certainly within the industry. Every pig producer is watching this. And really, it's also a factor that we do already have an animal care assessment that uses the existing code to assess to a national standard. And so producers know that when this new code comes out, very quickly it will turn around and become assessed on farm. So right now, the Code Development Committee is sorting through those 4,700 comments and figuring out ways to address it and address all the comments that have come in. And so that's going to be quite a process ahead of us. In terms of the principles of the Code Development Committee, and we've heard about these yesterday, and I do need to go back to them because they're critical to how decisions are made around the code table. We are looking for things that are good for the animals, but workable for producers and acceptable to society. And we have this, I call it a broader definition of welfare. I guess it's a more holistic definition of welfare that does look at biological functioning. So are the animals healthy, growing, and thriving? The affective states of feeling well, free from pain and fear, and natural living. Are they able to lead reasonably natural lives? And it's really important, and I think we took a lot of time around our code development table to understand these different perspectives because we do all come with our own biases. I do want to point out, though, Jeff Erton presented this slide yesterday And he had the nice, I think the original concept, which was in nice circles, and in the center there were overlapping circles, and the target is to get the code into those overlapping circles. I don't have those circles here because this is one of the biggest challenges that we face within the PIG code, not so much around the code development table, but when we start discussing the issues outside the code development process, both on the producer side and in the other kind of industry stakeholder and interested party side. And this is really the part that makes the conversation very difficult, because when you're talking in a box, you're talking to people or to an issue, you're not talking with them. So I'm going to talk about three challenges facing the PIG code. When I started to put this presentation together, I think I had about 10, and I was really trying to narrow it down to something that made sense to me, actually, to help me walk through this. And so I've put it down to three. One is that this is now a one-issue code. The next one is the complexities of this one issue, and then finding the right balance. So challenge one, the one-issue code. It is all about sow housing. And it was certainly one of the critical issues. I think we as the industry went into this code knowing full well this was probably going to be the pivotal point for the code discussions. So it has actually become a critical issue within the code development committee, but it is the critical issue when we look at the discussions outside the code development process. And it does put a real challenge on the code because it becomes about one animal, the sow, when there's lots of other animals on a pig farm, and one freedom. And we're really talking about freedom of movement, or this freedom of being able to express natural behavior. And the risk is that it minimizes the rest of the code and everything else that's in it. Our code is like all the other codes. It looks at all the pigs on the farm, all the housing, all the management practices. It's a very, you know, holistic code. And we are coming down to kind of defining its success on just one aspect. And I do worry that we're going to lose sight of everything else that's in the code that really there's not a lot of kind of controversy about. So what is the proposal on sow housing? The draft code that came out this summer talks about moving the industry from what is the norm, which is sows housed in stalls, to group housing. And it talks about a new facilities moving to group housing in 2014, and all facilities, so looking at conversion of existing facilities by 2024. And it does talk about the use of stalls for some limited time periods, as we've seen with directives in the European Union. So this proposal outlines, I kind of see two things. It outlines a clear definition of acceptable group housing, so the business that you can have stall use for a limited time, but the bulk of the time of the sow would be in groups. And then it talks about this mandatory requirement for conversions and set timelines. The Code Development Committee saw this proposal as the balance between the perspectives on welfare that we talked about and addressing the principles of the code development process. And certainly there were discussions with producers along the way. The producers on that committee did have discussions with those outside the committee itself. But the code process is quasi-confidential, so it's not that they could go out and talk broadly to 7,000 hog farmers. And so what has happened is that as the code went for public comment, you started to see a much higher level of engagement across the entire hog producer community. And we're seeing some very strong reactions to what came out in that public, proposed document. And so that's going to bring me to the next challenge, which is the complexities around this issue of sow housing. And I put this slide up, and it's interesting that we've had a lot of references to what I'm going to talk about with this slide. It's really just for illustration. So on the one hand, the proposed approach talks about a move to group housing for sows. And that's this single issue, looking at the sow, looking at trying to provide more freedom of movement for the animal. And it's very simple. It seems very simple. It's very clear, and it's very transparent, right? Move the sows to groups. On the other side, though, are all the issues that the industry faces in trying to make that happen. And you can see how it's a really difficult conversation. And I think we heard about that this morning, that the request is really simple, but the response is really complicated. And how can you have this kind of discussion kind of in a public forum and have any success in trying to show why a move to group housing is so challenging for the industry? I'm going to spend a few minutes, talking about where producers see the challenges in moving to group housing. And certainly these were discussed around the code table, but they've really been heightened during the public comment period as producers have really in their hands what the proposed code was about, and they think about how are they going to make it happen and how are they going to do it in a way that makes sense. So I'm going to look at these complexities in terms of those key principles, what's good for the animal, what's workable for producers, and what's acceptable for society. So let's start with the pigs. So here's the theory behind moving to group housing. The first box is the way sows were traditionally raised in groups. And actually, Crystal gave a great analogy this morning about working with her dad and how a sow came at him. And this is the experience of a lot of producers that are still in business today. They have witnessed those exact situations of sows in groups being very, very aggressive with each other. And so you do have sows that are injured, and you do have sows competing for feed, and you end up with sows that are really not in a good welfare state. And so the industry moved to sow stalls, and this has happened all around the world, because it was seen as an improvement in welfare. You have much more consistent nutrition, individual health, reduced aggression, and a much more consistent conditioning of sows across the facility. The idea, though, is that we now know more about group housing and how to have good welfare in group housing, and so let's go back to groups. But you have to realize that producers are still dealing with the fact that they moved to stalls for improved welfare situations. And this ideal works if you can maintain all the benefits that you had from moving to stalls, and you add the benefits of freedom of movement and the ability to socialize. But what producers are telling us, and this is their reality, these are the people that work with the animals every day, is they know of examples where the move to group housing has not resulted in improved welfare. And even our science committee report talks about that, yes, it is possible to achieve equal or greater productivity in group housing systems as compared to stalls, provided they are well designed and managed. So there's a lot of caveats with moving to group housing. It is possible, but the systems have to be well designed and managed. And producers and others, not just producers, but lots of others in the industry, are worried that the information is simply not there yet on how to maintain welfare, and particularly in situations where you're converting existing facilities. And the best case scenario for them may be equal welfare outcomes, and the worst case is poor welfare outcomes. And poor welfare outcomes simply aren't acceptable. Not for producers, not for society, not for anyone. So the question then becomes, are we looking at this as simply a trade-off of freedoms? And this is the traditional list of five freedoms that comes from the UK. You know, are we trading off the ability to express normal behavior with an increased incidence of pain and injury? And that's the risk, and that's the issue, really, that many producers are saying they're concerned about, and this trading off between freedoms. So then looking at conversions and a move to group housing, and is it workable for producers? So what are producers facing? Well, group housing, whether it's a new facility or whether it's conversion of an existing unit, is a significant undertaking, to say the least. It's a completely new system. New approaches to management are needed. And it's not like stalls, where stalls are basically one system. The move to group housing is a complex combination of feeding systems, of flooring systems, of group size, and of group dynamics. And even animal genetics may play a role. So all of these things have to come together. You have to choose each of them and make sure they're working together properly, and have management systems that are going to be able to accommodate that to have a successful outcome. And we know that conversion of existing facilities is even more problematic because you need to match all of those various combinations with the footprint of a barn you have in terms of, you know, what do you have now in terms of flooring and size, and taking out stalls. Each barn undergoing a conversion is unique, and so its ability to convert is going to be unique, and there's not going to be one size fits all. We simply don't have the information right now because it's not a standard practice to convert facilities. So there isn't the experience or the confidence really out there for producers to say, yeah, I'm going to do this and it's going to work out well. They just don't have that information and that confidence. There is certainly a national sow housing project that's underway that's going to be an attempt to get at this information, but we're certainly not there yet. And, of course, we're going to talk about costs. This is not simply a minor additional cost to a hog producer. It's significant. An economic analysis was conducted on the major proposals within the Hog Code, based on some work out of Quebec, and we're looking at $800 to over $1,000 a sow to make conversions, plus transition costs, because you've got to remember when you're converting a unit, those sows have to go somewhere. That's $500 million is the estimate for our industry as a whole. And there are lots of producers that say, you know, we have been through a really rough financial situation. We can't go to our bank and ask for additional credit. And there's a concern that banks will not extend credit for something like this, especially as it is being considered to be a mandatory element in the code. And probably a bit of a sore spot for the industry is the issue of cost sharing. We are talking to retailers and food service, but no one's really coming to the plate to say, this is such a big deal for us, we're going to help find a way for the value chain to finance it. Boys, if that happened, this would probably happen overnight. But that's not what we're hearing, and we're not seeing this kind of demonstrated in other areas as well. And the government might be there for some research and development, but it's been pretty clear it's not really interested in helping an industry convert. Now, the Ontario government, it can throw away $1 billion on gas plant mismanagement, but we don't seem to have the interest in helping an industry kind of address a switch like this. So producers are being asked to do these things, but there's no true incentives to give them the confidence to make the investments that would have to be made. And certainly through the public comment period, we heard very strongly that producers would exit the business if this became a mandatory requirement. And that's not the objective of the code. And it's really not in anyone's interest to simply close facilities here in Canada with the ultimate end point being probably filling the gap by imported product without the same kind of oversight that the code would give on the whole picture of raising hogs. And that brings us to meeting societal expectations. And this is the one actually I have the most trouble with, because there is certainly an expectation, and farmers have this as well, that they're raising livestock, and there are expectations about how animals are to be treated. But where do we find out what those expectations are? Who speaks for society? And who informs society? We talk about how few producers there are and kind of how there's this disconnect between producers and consumers, and I think producers and the general public. Who really knows what society finds acceptable in terms of raising livestock? We can certainly look at what the activists are doing, and they've been very successful in very publicly talking about the, I would call it the one animal, one freedom issue. They can be seen, perhaps by some, as representing society, but it's a very, very small percentage. We also have seen retailers and food service in Canada making announcements about how animals should be raised and their views about sow stalls. Is that the representation of society? We know that they're under a lot of pressure by those same activist groups or by shareholders and social media campaigns. So do we look to them as the representatives of society? I think the work that Crystal presented and Jeff presented this morning is really helpful in terms of helping us understand consumers and producers and non-producers, and maybe that's a more holistic way of getting a sense of what society is expecting from producers. And then there's the market, and I think there's a lot of producers that would simply say, if this is what consumers want, then let the market figure it out. Let the market give us premiums, and we will produce the way that group of consumers, in any case, would like us to produce. And producers are very willing to do that as long as there's kind of incentives and rewards in the market. I do, though, want to say that the goal of meeting societal expectations is probably the most difficult of the three. And how do you measure it, and how do you know if you're on the right track? And it's clouded by what I would call the noise. A lot of this noise is in the activist movements and the public campaigns that portray farming in a very negative light, that criticize farming practices, I think without recognizing the tremendous improvements that have been made in welfare over the years and the work that farmers do every day to produce a very, very high-quality product. And those campaigns do put farmers in a very defensive mode. Their livelihoods are being criticized, and they're being challenged by about what they do. So that brings us to the final challenge, which is finding the right balance. And I think this, for me, kind of sums up the code. And if you look at the wishbone, that's the code. That's the code development committee. We're all kind of trying to keep it together. But there's tremendous pressures to rip it apart. And everybody wants that nub at the top, right? And that nub is sow housing. So farmers are definitely on one side. They're one side of this pressure, saying, you know, we're being forced to make these changes, and we're concerned that we're going to end up with poorer welfare outcomes and costs to the industry that can't be recouped some way. And I think even within the producer community, there's a section of them wondering, what the heck are we doing developing a code? And some of them thinking it's a government process where it's their own national organization that asked for it. We're absolutely being challenged on it. And they're wondering, you know, why are there people that don't have a vested interest kind of telling us what to do? And that if changes are made, it's really only because there's some vocal extremists out there dictating this. And so we certainly have to deal with that and try to explain, you know, how the code was developed and all the principles and the definitions of welfare behind it. And that's not an easy task. And then you've got the other side, and I hate to call it sides, but that's kind of what sometimes this is coming down to, You know, there are those concerned that the industry is not moving forward. And there's the extreme side of that, which are the activists that are portraying farmers in such a bad light and just focusing on one issue. There's lots of fear. There's no question about it. And sides are being taken. Producers are insulted that their practices are being criticized, and so publicly. And when we look kind of elsewhere for, you know, how do we do this and how do we do it right, there's not a lot of positive things to take home. And just a quick kind of global scan, the EU, they've gone a legislated approach, so they had quite a long phase in for their move to group housing, became effective in January of this year. And not all countries are there, not all producers are there, and it's resulting in compliance issues and penalties. And it's not really that pretty. They also had really limited producer involvement in this directive on sow housing. And it's interesting when we talked about castration earlier that the industry is now kind of getting together to preempt some issues on castration by trying to work towards voluntary directives. Because they do feel that they were left out of some major decision making on sow stalls. And I think the full welfare implications of the shift in Europe is unknown. We talk again about this one animal and one issue. Do we know that the welfare outcomes of the animals that have moved to groups, that their welfare has actually improved? And I'm not sure to what extent we will find that out. The EU also has another benefit in that they're a fairly protected market. So when they have these directives, they're not really at risk of a huge inflow of imports from the rest of the world because their market is fairly protected, and we certainly don't have that. They have seen a negative effect on their competitiveness, or it's being portrayed that way. Their production numbers are down, and it has been linked to the directive on sow housing. If we look at the U.S., we've seen lots of state-level actions and marketplace announcements. Producer involvement even in these has been more a defensive position of the industry as opposed to kind of sitting down around tables and figuring out what the right way forward is. It is an open market, and their mantra, certainly on the producer side, is very much one of producer choice and let the market decide. I think Tim Favari, though, of Tim Hortons, said quite clearly yesterday, you know, with their view of things in the U.S., it is very polarized. And I think we see that as well here when we look at what's happening with them in the U.S. But we tend to look just at the EU and the U.S., but there's a whole rest of the world out there, and we export about 70% of our production, so we're also pretty sensitive to what our other markets are thinking. And certainly the other major hog-producing nations like China and Brazil and Russia and Mexico, this isn't even on their radar. You know, they're worried about lots of different things, and sow housing is really not one of them. And so it does bring us to Canada and this really rather unique approach of us trying to figure it out ourselves, not have it legislated, not have it driven by activists, but let's sit down and figure out what makes sense for the industry. And we do kind of look at these other countries as, okay, what can we learn from them? What are the things to be avoided? And I think the code process is really the answer for us. We've heard all this over the last 2 days. It's a credible process. It has appropriate engagement. And the goal is to have this one national and consistent standard. It's scientifically informed. It's working to common definitions and understanding. And that really is our big challenge, is to talk about that broad definition of welfare and not be talking kind of at each other. And if we get it right, and if that wishbone doesn't break, we can end up with a really strong positioning for the Canadian hog industry. It can help prevent a proliferation of other approaches, a really solid base for welfare, and I think a beacon, right, for consumers and society. I mean, if we can get everybody backing on this, and to say, you know what, this is the go-to place, this is what you need to know about welfare, that's a very powerful tool. But we are not there yet with the PIG code, and we have a whole lot of work ahead of us, and we have really to work at how to keep talking to each other, certainly within the code process, but probably more importantly right now, outside that code process, and to build that common understanding of what that code is about with those three principles and those three aspects of welfare. We certainly need a commitment to a resolution on the PIG code. I think from the Canadian Pork Council side, we're there, we're committed to seeing this code come to a conclusion on all issues, but sow housing in particular. And then we're going to need to see a commitment to the outcomes. Once we get this code together, we are going to have full support of the code. It's not going to be perfect. But if all the parties can support it as the best outcome possible, then that's what will make it a very powerful code. So the PIG code is certainly a challenging one, but as was said yesterday, nothing worth doing is easy. Thank you very much.
Any burning questions? It is lunchtime, but thank you, Ben.
Great.
Okay, oh. Thanks so much.
Susan?
Susan?
Maybe I should keep it short. I'm Niels from the Dutch Embassy, and I'm maybe the only one here from the EU. And let me say that on most points, I disagree with you. And that maybe it's good for me to invite you to come to the Netherlands one day and to show it around, because you questioned the scientific, evidence. Yeah, for the improvement of animal welfare, that's there. And there's also proof that the farmers themselves, their welfare increases because they have a much better relationship with their animals, and that they also have a more nice environment to work in. So the evidence is there. We are maybe a little bit in front in Europe, and maybe we need to explain it a little bit better or show it. I'm happy to do that, but I have to say this, that there is proof. So the main issue maybe is to explain it to all the pig producers, because I also know that there are a lot of producers who already transition to sow housing here. I've talked to some companies who provide them nowadays, and they say the demand for their products for sow housing types in groups is increasing. So maybe it's all about explaining to the farmers, and also, of course, money is a major concern. But basically, I would happily invite you to come, and I will show you around.
That sounds like a great offer.
Yeah.
And certainly, when my comments are about the EU as a whole, I think Canada is a lot of Canadian hog groups is very familiar with the Netherlands. And the work that you've been doing, and I think there's been actually quite a few missions over there to look at how can a move to loose housing, how can it work, and what's been the experience over there. But we also know of lots of other areas in the EU that are probably not as forward-looking, I guess, as the Netherlands, and do wonder, it was really just a question, of will there be improved welfare in all cases with a forced conversion?
We are maybe a little bit behind if you compare it to other countries, because countries in the north, like Scandinavian countries, or I believe also Germany and the United Kingdom, are maybe in front of us, the Netherlands. They already have it. The transition was completed there already. And I think in those countries, it proved to be improving, let's say it, on farm animal welfare, but also for farmers themselves.
Thanks to Catherine, please.